Welcome, listener. This is episode 77 of Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. We have a packed show and we're talking about B2B content formats. We have no fewer than three guests. The marvellous Lorraine Williams from Lighthouse Proofreading will explain the steps she takes to proof a PDF, while Nick Mason and Carla Rivershaw from Turtle tell us why they think it's time for the PDF to die altogether. I've also been snagging tips from copywriters at this year's copywriting conference. My name's David Maguire and I'm Creative Director at Radix Communications. As ever, I'm here with our founder and CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi, Fiona. How are you doing?
I'm quite damp.
I think you may have to explain that for the listener.
Oh, no, it's just the Cornish weather we're experiencing. So it was a beautiful sunny morning all morning, and then just at lunchtime there was torrential rain.
Oh,
so,
boom. I thought we were going to be washed into the sea.
I've got a woolen skirt on, so I now smell like a wet dog.
Lovely.
I'm sure everyone wanted to know that.
So before we get into the interviews, though, I actually have a couple of parish notices to share. First, listener, it's time to tell us your favourite piece of B2B content so far in 2019. It's super easy. Just get your phone out, record a quick voice memo telling us who you are and what piece of content you've enjoyed most, why it's so good, and email the file to podcast@radix-communications.com. We'll collect the nominations, we'll have a vote, and all being well, we'll reveal the winners in December's podcast. Fiona, have you got a front runner for this year so far?
In terms of B2B content,
yes.
I do, but it's very niche.
Oh, how niche are we talking?
So one of the topics that I write on quite a lot for our clients is, one of our clients is GPS cybersecurity.
Oh, yes.
So the whole thing about how you can jam GPS and you can spoof GPS. And there was a report that came out from a think tank called the Centre for Advanced Defence Studies, which has mapped every instance of GPS spoofing around the world in 2018. And it's just a really beautifully produced report. It's like interactive and it's got maps and it's got video embedded in it, and it's just got some really cool sort of stats and stuff that I can use in future blogs with this client, so it's good.
Wow.
Oh, it's got a lovely name as well. It's called Above Us Only Stars.
Oh.
Which is nice, isn't it?
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I like that on many levels. I have to see if that makes the final list at the end of the year, but it sounds like a strong contender.
Well, let's hope so, yes.
Actually, I have another thing to tell the listener about. On Thursday, the 7th of November, we have another webinar. I'll be going through the 15 quality checks we use when we're reviewing content in-house to help you build your own quality checklist to manage writers and stakeholders and check the quality of your own work. We'll put a link in the show notes, or you can find details at radix-communications.com or on our Twitter at radixcom. Right then, that's enough of the adverts. Let's get on with the interviews. Recently, I had the chance to visit the very swanky Brick Lane offices of Turtle, which is the company that makes that interactive, swipey content format you might have seen. I wanted to talk about the format, but also their single message marketing campaign, Kill the PDF. So I sat down with CEO Nick Mason and Head of Marketing Carla Rivershaw. And I started by asking Nick, what did the PDF ever do to you?
Many things, many brutal things. No, really, I mean, the reason why we are sort of anti-PDF, if you like, why we're on that side of the argument is we see it as a format that was created, obviously, a long time ago, I think back as far as 1991. And really, so much has moved on since then. And PDF, really, to our minds, hasn't kept pace with that. So, fundamentally, they were created originally in order to allow sort of printed documents to be, you know, sent off to print and managed in that way. So they are sort of digital paper, if you like. But they don't provide anything like analytics or, you know, a particularly good user experience or interaction or integration with sort of video providers or CRMs or things like this, which allow you really to leverage the full range of marketing technologies that are available. So as we see it, it's something just that hasn't kept pace with the change that's gone on with marketing, which, as everyone knows, has changed more in the last sort of 5 or 10 years than it has in the previous 50, and will continue to change. And so as we see it, this format from, as I say, times gone by, with all of these sort of, lack of data, lack of insight, you send these things out, maybe a download count, but what did people actually read? Where did they engage? What should we talk about next week? What's turning people off? None of that kind of insight is available. So there's a variety of reasons, but I guess the high level reason is it's just an archaic format to our mind that hasn't kept pace with the rest of the world.
Sure. And what is it about the user experience that's particularly not great with a PDF?
So PDFs aren't responsive. So you kind of, you load them up and you're on a mobile and you're pinching and zooming and you're trying to navigate around. They typically, don't resize to your screen. So you're zooming in and out even on a desktop. And you're scrolling through large quantities of text typically. And there's some interesting psychology behind, the way we read and how layout impacts the influence that text has on us. And so what we advocate is breaking things up much more into kind of chapters and sections and using, a turning of pages, et cetera, as if you're familiar with the product, laying things out in a way that's more aligned psychologically to how we parse and understand information. So from a PDF user experience perspective, it is essentially digital, scrolling through digital sheets of paper, but there's so much more that you can do on a modern phone or modern laptop or modern desktop nowadays. You think about, the games you can play on your phone and all the kind of interactive experiences, PDF offers none of that. We think B2B content should be able to take advantage of those new things.
But when you're talking about killing the PDF, you're talking about as a marketing format, right? I mean, all that stuff about, I know there are designers who will be listening to this and kind of gasping in terror because they still need to send proofs off and they still need to send artwork to printers. So is the PDF allowed to survive for that function? Carla?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think we took the phrase kill the PDF because we are trying to get people's attention and sort of raise this issue among the marketing community. But certainly we do recognize there is, of course, a role for PDF. It just shouldn't be the primary format for B2B marketers when they're publishing content online. It's very much an offline format, and we're trying to take an offline format and sort of make it work for online. But in today's technology, as Nick was just saying, it doesn't really cut it anymore.
And the idea of kill the PDF, I know the listener often will like to have this, big, clean idea and get it signed off and get it approved and run with it. So where did that come from? And was it your idea? And how did you get it through the management?
I mean, to be honest, I think it was an idea that we all came up with. I mean, actually, I think this was something that had been somewhat discussed prior to even me joining Turtle. But when I was thinking about what our big campaign is going to be for the year, and I'd heard some discussions around this, I thought that's what it has to be. I mean, it's something really bold. Not everybody's going to like it, but to be honest, I think that's okay. We're fine with, rubbing some people up the wrong way, because at the end of the day, I think most data-driven marketers today, if not all of them, can see why we would make a statement like that, so...
Did you get any pushback on it from within the organization?
No, I mean, to be honest, I think everybody is very much on board with it, particularly that given the fact that our tool is sort of like the disruptor for the PDF. I think it's a very clear message. The sales guys love it. They use it often to describe what we do to prospects, that we're the PDF killers. And certainly Nick, he was very much on board with the messaging as well. So no, certainly from my perspective, there was no resistance.
And one of the things that we were talking about earlier is the documents that you create in Turtle. When you send that to someone, are you sending them a turtle document? You're sending them a turtle? You're saying, we're going to do a turtle? Is that?
This is a subject of much debate. So they're called internally, officially, stories. And the reason for that is that it's a storytelling format where you're meant to have kind of a narrative that you go through and you enjoy it and you slow down and you read as you do a story. But we find customers referring to them as stories, as turtle docs and as turtles. And so this is kind of interesting, but also a challenge because we need to work out what the nomenclature is for these things. It can get quite confusing because, if your company is called Turtle, the product is called Turtle, and the output is called Turtle, that's a lot of turtles. And so we have to work out what to do with that.
Thanks again, Nick and Carla, for your time. Fiona, where do you stand on the PDF debate? Are you a fan, or is it time for the format to die a bit of a death?
Well, I'm kind of on the fence, so I don't really have a single opinion. But I mean, I do have many opinions, not that. Oh, yeah. I don't have one single opinion about PDF.
Right.
So it depends on what I'm doing with it, really, because if I'm using a PDF for research, I generally want to print that out to read, because I'm old, so I like to print things out rather than read them online. So very often it takes a lot of ink and a lot of paper to print out a PDF, and it's very often a lot of that is just like block colour that you don't need. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I find them quite annoying. But in other ways, like when I've written something that is then put into PDF, if the design has been done really well, I think that can really help to sort of complement the writing and make much more of an impact and make it more pleasant to read than if it was just, you know, like a chunk of text, like an old school white paper used to be, for example.
Sure. Although we haven't seen too many new kind of innovative B2B content formats lately. Do you think it's time for a new format to enter the stage, maybe?
Yeah, because, you know, I was a big fan of SlideShare, and I thought that was a really nice new innovative format in its day, and it was a really nice format to write for as well. It made you write in a different way, made you really think about what you were writing. So, yes, I mean, I think, you know, the one we kind of hold up as being innovative most often before we spoke to Turtle was the kind of you know, interactive scrolling, like a long ass web page, I think it gets called. But yeah, I would like to see some new innovative formats, definitely. Yeah,
and it kind of feels a little bit like because of the way you navigate your own way through the story, like a Turtle story has some of that stuff that the SlideShare rant had, where, you know, you were engaged, you were a co-conspirator in the story because you had to keep clicking to go forwards, kind of thing.
Yes, that's right. Yes, you're in control of moving the story on. Yes, it definitely has that aspect to it. Yeah,
cool. And have you had a look at many Turtle stories yourself? What do you think of it as a format?
Well, I've had a look at Turtle's own one, the Kill the PDF, looking at that, I realised that I was looking at one the other day without even realising it.
Yes, in a way that's quite nice that it's there in the background, in the zeitgeist, you know, but without sort of maybe not quite such good news for Turtle.
Yeah, so I mean, I was looking at one that Microsoft had created, obviously with the Turtle platform. So yes, I mean, I found it engaging to look at and easy to navigate as well. So yeah,
because that's always the thing, isn't it? Whether it's always obvious what you have to do next. I think that's often the thing that kind of worries people about them. But from your point of view, kind of coming to it fairly fresh, you know, the next thing to do was always pretty clear.
It took me a little while. No, I mean, just a couple of seconds to realise that, you know, some of it goes across wise and some of it you have to click and you open up something below the splash page, I think they call it. Is that what it's called?
I think it's a surf page.
A surf
at the top,
page, yes. Yeah.
And then you dive into the kind of the content pages below.
Yeah, but once you know what you're doing, I think it's a really nice format, yeah.
Cool. And they were saying you can do all sorts of other weird things with it that you might not have thought of. So as well as using it as like a content marketing format, they send all their sales proposals in it.
Right, yes, because it does, I suppose it does fulfil part of the function that maybe a PowerPoint would fulfil, but it makes things look much nicer than they look in PowerPoint.
Yes, that, but also the thing about how you get really granular detail on who looked at what for how long.
Yeah.
So they know exactly when someone's opened their sales proposal, when they got to the price page, everything else. They actually know when the buyer has read the thing.
Absolutely, which you don't get with PowerPoint or with PDF.
No,
yeah,
absolutely. And when you came to the Kill the PDF idea, I mean, do you like a big sort of single issue, single message campaign like that? I mean, we tend not to see that many of them in B2B tech.
We don't, and I think probably because a lot of the things that the clients we work with are trying to communicate are quite complex and can't always be boiled down into three words like that, even though we do our best to try and do that. So, yeah, I do like a sort of really clear single issue campaign, yes. Yeah, even though like when you get down into the nuance of it, it may not be as simple as just kill the PDF. You know, the PDF no longer has any place in society.
No, sure. And I think from Carla's point of view, as she's pushing that idea through, I think it was pretty helpful to her that, you know, their salespeople knew that they were against the PDF, you know, and also that Nick as CEO was really, really bought into the idea. So they're able to be that single-minded about it without having too much pushback from stakeholders in the organisation.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. Yes, you know, they're able to be bold and be brave because they had their stakeholder buy-in there. I'm just thinking that for most of our clients, they would all go with the same thing, like kill the spreadsheet. That's mostly what it comes down to with our clients. Yeah.
So much B2B tech is up against spreadsheets.
Exactly, exactly.
For the time being, though, PDFs do look like they're here to stay. And I know a lot of copywriters struggle to check and edit content in that format. So we got in touch with Lorraine Williams at Lighthouse Proofreading to ask how she goes about it. I started with an accusation. Lorraine, do you actually like PDFs?
I do. They're brightly coloured. There's words and pictures and colours.
Right.
It's all the best things.
But yes... But are they easy to work with?
Depends what you're using them for.
Right.
So, on your phone, no. But then, not many years ago, we wouldn't have been downloading things onto our phone, so that's kind of a newish issue. So on your phone, no, they're not ideal. On a big screen, I don't have an issue with them, because you're in control of where you go. You can scroll up and down, and you can search for things, you know, use the find function. So I find that handy. But then I'm always coming, usually at it from a proofreading perspective. I read PDFs, but when I'm reading them for my own stuff, I don't really register how I'm using them. So any registering I am doing is how I proofread them, which is very different to how you would read one.
Yeah, I'm sure, because I think you have a very special set of skills. Skills that make you a nightmare for someone like me.
Yes.
So, I mean, I know, you know, designers like a PDF, because they lock all the stuff down. You can get it, send it off for, you know, for client approval. And you can get all the artwork to printers and things. But as kind of a, either as an online delivery mechanism or as a thing to work in, I know that there's something that the copywriting team here find really frustrating, because it's not like you can do track changes in a PDF. So client comments are really hard to kind of implement in the text, and then you can't see, and if you suggest a change, you can't see if that's going to screw up the design or not, because you have to put it in like a sticky note rather than, you know, and then you can end up rewriting whole chunks of text.
And you've just got notes everywhere, and it does become quite chaotic. I mean, if you open up the sidebar where all the comments are, and you can kind of scroll through and then read everything, but then you're constantly cross-referencing where they are on the page, and that is just a sea of sticky notes and crossings out and highlighted bits. And they, actually edit, they're a nightmare.
You're triggering my PTSD now. Yes, I've had many experiences like that, or the bit where there's such a big lot of text that you just need to take it all out and change the text, but then you cut and paste it into Word, and that's just, oh, forget it.
Just start again, one little comment, whole new text.
Oh, man, it's just, because when it comes into Word, all the order is weird, and it looks wrong, and it's all weird, and the white text disappears.
And it breaks up words.
Yes.
I hit the mic then. But it breaks up words at really weird places, and not even on line breaks that are on the PDF. So you might have the word difference, and it's differ, space, ends. And if you cross-check that on the PDF, it's one word. It's nothing to do with line break or anything, and I've no idea how it... I don't really know what it does between there, which is the PDF, and the Word document. I've got all the hand gestures.
Yeah, hand gestures work brilliantly on a podcast.
They really do,
say.
And also really far away from the mic.
Yes.
I did really go wide. No one can see what I'm doing, but it's proper monkey arms.
Yeah, it really is. And don't bang the mic, so that's great.
Yeah, I know. I'm staying calm.
So for someone that likes PDFs, it sounds like you kind of have a love-hate relationship with them. Is that fair?
There's a mild hatred of them in that they're not easy to annotate. But what I do love is if someone has fully proofread all the content before it gets flowed into that PDF, all you're really looking at should be how it's impacted anything to do with the layout or how it flows or how... I'm trying to visualize it in my mind and not hit the microphone at the same time. So where words break or hyphenated words, if you've got one word, a hyphen at the end of a line, and then the other word at the beginning of the next line, you've got all these messy dangling hyphens and end dashes or forward slashes. Things like that look ugly. That's not an issue in Word document or Google Docs, but once it's in the design layout, it looks messy. I should really be looking for those things rather than flagging up any spelling errors and rogue commas and double spaces. I should purely be looking at the layout of how it all sits together and just double checking everything is right. So there shouldn't be that many issues.
There shouldn't be.
And there always is. But that is then what I like about it. So even though it is a faff, I get to see all these things that no one else has seen. So it's a bit like the Nancy Drew of proofreading, is that at a glance it looks fine, but actually if you boil it down, there's lots of fiddly things. Like I worked on something the other month and logos top right-hand corner, except one somewhere randomly in the middle had moved. You wouldn't notice that. Worked on something the other week. It was a lovely brochure and it had all been set up by a graphic designer with the paragraph styles, but there was two paragraphs on two opposing pages and I couldn't tell if they were a different font or a different size, but I flagged it to her and she was like, no, it's all just the same paragraph. It's the same throughout. And I was like, I swear it's different. She looked into it and it was out by 0.5 of a whatever a font is. Point?
Yeah.
It's out by 0.5 of the point.
You're scary.
I am. I've got starry eyes right now. So I can see that and I can't always tell what it is, whether it is the font that's different or the size, but I can spot when something isn't the same. And it's those little things. And because she uses a designer and she knew it was in paragraph styles, she was expecting something different to what was actually there, so she didn't see it.
Yeah. See, the bit that that bugs me when I'm reading my work that's been then put into a PDF by a designer is that they will have just kind of put it in as plain text. And so when I've put in, you know, italics for emphasis and things, they all disappear and then they're not there anymore. And often they don't get put back.
And you don't know that unless you see it.
Exactly.
So you don't entirely know, because you've created that in that style for a reason and you don't know if that reason has then been passed on to the reader.
Yeah, and in fairness, the reason is probably just because, you know, I'm overcomplicating things.
This is really important. It's going to be really big and bold.
Yes, yes, you will read it this way with this intonation.
Even though you don't know what that is because that was in my mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's writing, isn't it? So, you as the PDF proofreader supreme, you've come to bring us some tips for when we cannot avoid having to proofread something that is in a PDF document. You've got a process for how we can do it and make it work. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, go!
I'm going to say it's a five-step process, but by the time I've explained it, I'll probably have found I've shoved extra steps in.
Okay.
But this is what I use when I do it myself. So how it works is it's very up and down. So you're not just reading it once. You're reading a lot of times, but you're looking at different bits each time. So I always start off by copying and pasting everything that is in there into Word, which is where it came from.
Yeah.
But you find things, you find the odd genuine typo or unnecessary double space. Oh, I don't know what it is about those double spaces. Little things do somehow creep in and you can just cut all those out quite easily by checking it in Word, and then you're cross-referencing that against the PDF and marking that up. Then the next stage is you go back to the beginning and I check all the headers and all the footers. So not the headings themselves. You actually look at, I mean, a lot of things just tend to be logo kind of top right, top left, but sometimes they might have like a little introductory kind of heading thing in there. So I always check the top and the bottom. I check those for the spelling, the grammar, the fonts, the sizing, especially hyperlinks, URLs, anything with a reference in the footer. I check all of that and I work through the whole document. Then I go back to the beginning and I check all the headings. And again, spelling, grammar, font.
Because there's so often a typo in the heading.
You've got to check the heading.
And it's so embarrassing because then you go, oh my God, how could I have not seen that?
Because everyone checked it and everyone assumes that because there's only three words there that someone's checked that and seven people have looked at it and seven people haven't actually read that heading.
Because your brain has put what you think should be there rather than what is there.
And I don't know about other people or other proofreaders, but I find the bigger the text is, font size, or if you zoom in, it's harder to read. And I know some people suggest kind of zooming in to read things, but it's not, it doesn't look like how you naturally read. So I find I miss stuff. So I have to have it at normal kind of reading point size.
Okay.
So headings, check those, and also check the punctuation. So whether there's closing punctuation on those headings or not. And if any headings are sentences, how they've kind of been used throughout. And I go back to the beginning and I check all the things like quotes and bullet points and numbering. So any kind of pull out quotes and stats. I check all those are consistent in terms of colorings, fonts. I'm just saying the same words. I check the same things, but for different...
But this is the order.
Yeah.
Right.
Once I've checked all those bits, I go back.
To the beginning.
And I read it. From the beginning, including all the headings and everything that I've already read, I read it top to bottom, syllable by syllable. Because if I'm reading, I will read like a reader. Mm-hmm. And you're reading ahead and you're looking, you're kind of scrolling across the mm-hmm. screen. You're not looking at the actual word. So I have to kind of look at the word syllable by syllable. And I find that my eyes bounce. Like, syllable to syllable, bouncing up and down. Did you ever watch Disney sing-along songs?
No. I'm just going to give that one a hard pass. No, I never watched Disney sing-along songs.
So I had the Under the Sea VHS, which was Little Mermaid themed.
Yes.
And so all the songs were either from Little Mermaid or Disney cartoons and Disney films that were all about the sea.
Okay.
And you're watching the cartoon with the song and then the lyrics are underneath and there's a little Mickey face or a little Mickey head and it bounces along all the words so you can sing along.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
So I proofread like a bouncing Mickey head.
Okay, that was weirdly specific, but I think...
If you watch it, that's it. That's a visual depiction of how I proofread.
I think the listener, even if they're not familiar with this particular VHS, will be familiar with the idea of a bouncing ball that goes along the top of a...
Yeah, a ball could have worked too.
But it's not as good as a Mickey head.
Specifically a Mickey head.
Okay, but is that kind of a mental thing that you do to keep yourself on the syllable by syllable so that your brain doesn't just go, oh, look, it's fine, speed
just
up.
Just scroll. I find that my eyes do it naturally. So I think in order to do syllable by syllable, I think my eyes bounce anyway. It's not a specific thing.
Okay.
They just seem to nod up and down. And so I work top to bottom through the document, reading everything. And then there's something else that I do after I've read it all. I look at the images. So that's what I do last. So once everything else, anything really to do with the copy has been done, I will go back and I'll check all the images because sometimes you find that they don't fill the width of the page or they don't necessarily match the copy or they're just a bit skew-whiff. And I find that I'll go through it all, but then if I zoom out, I'll actually spot things a lot easier than being zoomed in. So mm-hmm. I look through, then I zoom out and just kind of scroll through it again. And that is the end of the process.
So from that point of view, the PDF zoominess is kind of quite helpful for you.
I find it really helpful.
Okay. And useful.
Yeah. And being able to search as well.
Yes.
So even though I've checked it for, say it's meant to be in US English and I've checked it all for that, if I was to come across something and think, actually, did I see an S there and I should have seen a Z? So say I'm looking for maximise or something. Mm-hmm. I can just control F and check the whole document.
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. Like, I've actually found proofreading websites harder.
Right.
So if you have an online version of a PDF, in a way it's harder to proofread, but from a user angle, it's so much easier, but potentially more errors in continuity, not necessarily the copy, as in the typos.
Okay, so... Top tips for the listener. Got any top tips for how to do a PDF?
What do you mean by how to do it? How to proofread it?
Yeah.
Slowly.
Right.
In a room away from everyone else.
Okay.
Peace and quiet. You do have to take the time. It's not a quick job. You can't rush it. Assume the obvious hasn't been checked.
Right.
Check the headings. Just definitely check the headings. And check your links work. Because yes. A lot of the time they go to 404s.
Ah, okay. So check the headings, check the links, and lock yourself in a basement.
Yes.
Perfect.
With snacks.
Thanks, Lorraine, for those tips. Very useful, and bring snacks is always my favourite piece of advice. Fiona, do you often have to check work that comes back from clients in PDF format? How do you find the process?
Yes, quite often, and I find the process horrible, which is why I'm glad Lorraine exists and we can ask her to do it. It's not so much the sort of proofing of the PDF, but it's the sort of giving of the feedback, the having to like put everything in sticky notes, and you're not quite sure when you're putting change this in inverted commas to this in inverted commas, whether the designer's going to take it literally and put things in inverted commas, and you just don't really know how to give the feedback very well in a PDF. I don't think so. I don't enjoy checking work that comes back in PDF. No.
No, although thankfully I think those tips might help a little bit, but here's hoping.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
Finally, before we go, I recently had the honour of hosting the UK's National Copywriting Conference in London, and I caught up with some of the copywriters who went along to find out their favourite tip from the day.
Hi, Mel. I'm from Words That Sell, and I really loved the Oppenheimer, I think it was Oppenheimer, reasons why you have to write short copy, because I've been saying or cutting out unnecessary words. And when I teach people, I do a whole thing called Lingo Bingo, with where people have to find the short word and I'm reading out the long word just to try and persuade people not to do it. And I'm so glad I can now quote a scientific research peer-reviewed study to say I am right.
Absolutely. Okay, hi, I am Ashley. I came here from Dallas, Texas, and I currently work for McAfee in-house, the cybersecurity company. And the most interesting thing I've learned today was from the first session. There was a tip about mining reviews on like Amazon and any other places your product is sold to pull consumer insights from those reviews and then like tweak that language to be appropriate for advertising, but then basically just repeat what the customer is thinking back to them in a better way.
Hi, I'm Melissa. I'm from SimCorp in Copenhagen, Denmark. The best thing I learned today was individual tools that I can use to do research, especially for search engine optimization.
Like what?
Like what? Like scraping copy off of your competitors' websites and putting it into diagrams so then you can look for keywords that maybe you're not utilizing in your own copy.
Go! So my name's Paul French, I work at Evershed Sutherland, and the best thing I've heard today is what you've just told me about the study, the Trudeau study, which I'm going to use to make myself look very clever at work next week.
Great.
Hi there, my name's Rohan Seal. I'm at the Copywriting Conference for the second year running. I work in-house at One Savings Bank, which is based in Kent. I think the most thing that I've enjoyed most today was in the second session was the behavioural biases as well. It's something that was briefly touched on last year, and I'm certainly looking to develop that and put that into my work over the coming months and years, hopefully.
My name is Sam B, and I'm a freelance copywriter, and the best thing I learned today was that CopyCon is coming back for two whole days next year.
Wow, thanks very much to everybody who gave us your time and your tips there. Sounds like it was a really good conference.
Yeah, it was. It was always a good day and fun to see Harry Kapoor again.
Absolutely, yes, it's always good to see Harry.
Sadly, we are out of time for this episode. I can't quite believe how much we've crammed in. But remember, listener, do send us a quick voice memo with your favourite piece of B2B content this year to podcast@radix-communications.com. And look in the show notes on Twitter at radix.com and at radixcommunications.com for details of our webinar on defining good B2B content, and sign up for the newsletter for tips and insights. Until next time, remember, Pobody's Nerfect. Bye.
Goodbye.